Park Street. This is Ryan Gilmer, and today is Lent Day 8, and I'm super excited to be here with Sadie Zagarek and Juliana Ritz. And for those of you who may not know either of these young ladies, could you guys give a quick little background of how you got to Park Street and what you do in Ashland?
My name is Sadie, and I've been at Park Street for about 3 years. I run The Well on the campus of Ashland University, if you've ever heard of that. So I get to do a lot of college ministry. And prior to that, you probably saw me on stage or on the TV, if you're one of the TV folks, talking about short-term mission trips. So I used to coordinate those, but now I'm doing a lot of college ministry.
And I'm Juliana, and I've been going to Park Street probably about the same time, about 3 years, since I was a student at AU. And then transitioned out of college and stuck around the community. So I'm probably most known around here for owning Fine's Bakery in town.
Cool. Guys, thanks for doing this. I'm excited to have a conversation with you. Let's go ahead and start reading. Today's passage is John 4, 1 through 26. So Sadie, you wanna read it?
Yes, I'm reading from the NRSV. Now when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard Jesus is making and baptizing more disciples than John, although it was not Jesus himself, but his disciples who baptized, he left Judea and started back to Galilee. But he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a Samaritan city called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired out by his journey, was sitting by the well. It was about noon. A Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." His disciples had gone to the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that's saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have no bucket, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us this well, and with his sons and his flocks drank from it?" Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but those who drink of the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give will become in them a spring of water gushing up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I may never be thirsty or have to keep coming here to draw water." Jesus said to her, "Go, call your husband and come back." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying I have no husband, for you have had 5 husbands, and the one that you have now is not your husband. What you have said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you say that the place where people must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father seeks such as these to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will proclaim all things to us." Jesus said to her, "I am he, the one who is speaking to you."
Cool. Thank you, Sadie. There's just so much good stuff in these passages. I think, do you guys have anything you want to kick off with that you found noteworthy or interesting, or a particular verse that, you know, stands out to you?
I think the whole interaction with Jesus and the Samaritan woman is interesting. And I found this out a year or so ago, that this is actually the longest dialogue that Jesus has with anybody in all of the Gospels. And so he's not actually supposed to be talking to a Samaritan, and he happens to talk to her the most. So I always like her her zeal for life, because she just keeps going back at Jesus saying, "I think I know who, like, what you're saying or what you're trying to say." And he's like, "You don't get it. I am the Messiah." So
yeah, that's interesting what you said about the longest dialogue, because you're right, they do go back and forth a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of interesting things. The first thing he says to her is, give me a drink. You know, so he was walking at noon and became thirsty, and, you know, he's thirsty. It's interesting that later on, as we go through the Gospels, like, there's going to be another. This is not the last time Jesus will be thirsty. And I think, you know, it's John setting up this idea that Jesus is, like, you know, he has physical needs, but it's also, it's hard for me also as, I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear your guys' perspective reading this as women.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, it's like, it's kind of a scandalous, like, obviously it's a scandalous interaction, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's a Jewish man, a Samaritan woman, and asking her for a drink, like, she kind of, I think, reads between the lines a little bit of, like, why are you asking? What are you really asking me for? You know, like, it just seems
sure.
very...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I want to go further with that than I have to, but it's, like, it does seem like there's something kind of, like, vaguely awkward
<She's>
about the interaction.
Yeah.
Like, right, she... Like, it's not a normal interaction, right? Like, he approaches her first and asks for something, and he's kind of clearly looking her out, seeking her out.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, as the conversation goes on, you realize, like, she kind of has a history with men. She's had 5 husbands. She's not married to the, you know, to the guy she's with. And so she's very, like, I feel like she's quite guarded at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of things going on with her. First of all, you're not supposed to be at a well at noon.
Right, because it's the hottest part of the day. And
well, and the whole, that whole culture is all about community. I think we
yeah.
as Americans don't really get it because... We do things by ourselves all the time, and we basically worship individualism.
Right.
But this sort of community in the ancient Middle East didn't have a concept for individualism. And so for her to be separating herself from community is quite rogue. And so she doesn't really want to be seen. I'm sure she doesn't want to be spoken to by a Jew because of their history.
Yeah.
But what I think is really interesting is that we do kind of read between the lines of she's got some husbands and she has a boyfriend and all of this kind of stuff. But what I have to remember is that being attached to a man in that culture was like allowing you to be alive because they
mm-hmm.
are the ones that are providing for you. And so I try not to read between the lines to say that she's promiscuous or any of that because it's possible that she's just trying to survive. And to be approached
right.
by a Jew would certainly be surprising to her.
Well, she's certainly probably been outcasted because of the number of husbands she's had. But you're right. It's not like it's her complete. It's not. She's not at 100% fault, right? There's lots of circumstances that go into the fact that she's
right.
she's vulnerable, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So there is, like, you know, Jews probably would look down on her. The Pharisees certainly would have looked down on her. But you're right. She is. She's the most vulnerable. She's not religiously affiliated the right way. She's a woman. She's basically single. Like, she is very on the margins.
Oh, yeah.
Of
and
society.
This...
She's totally alone. She has no friends. Even the Samaritans won't associate her with her. It's like
mm-hmm.
nobody will talk to her except
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, and this is not the hot spot for women's rights. So she is having a rough day.
Yeah.
And isn't it, am I wrong in saying that this is the first time that Jesus reveals himself as the Messiah in the gospel?
I believe so.
Like, it's just always so interesting to me, especially to put myself in the position of, like, you know, who am I in this story? And, like, if I am this woman that's, like, on the outside and did a bunch of wrong things and wouldn't typically think of myself as the person that is doing everything right in society or culture or whatever, in that Jesus chooses her to be the first person to reveal himself to, I just feel like is one of the most beautiful and ridiculous things
mm-hmm.
to think about. We just listed all the reasons why she's an outcast and some random person that you would give no accolades to at all in that culture or just in general. Just doesn't seem like that would be the logical choice of the first person that you would essentially reveal your secret to, not secret, but like this giant world-changing piece of information. It's just crazy to think that she, of all people, is the one that he decides to make it known to first.
Definitely. I think it's interesting that Jesus is constantly breaking down those barriers. And we can say that's true in our lives, too. But the story that comes right before this is him talking to Nicodemus, the Pharisee, who comes to him at night to talk to him And he says to Nicodemus, you have to be born again. And Nicodemus is like, that's gross. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's speaking in this, like, kingdom language. But when it is, you're right, when it's this interaction with the woman at noon, in the middle of the day, not the dark of night, but the middle of the day, he is very clear about who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's not trying to talk around it. Yeah, he's not, like, giving the parable, or he just says, hi, give me a drink, let's talk about things. By the way, I am the Messiah. She's straight up questioning him, like, I know the Messiah is coming. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us. He had no question about it. He's like, yes, he will. Here I am. Hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine what that reveal would feel like as that woman.
There's an interesting kind of sequence of dialogue starting in verse, I guess. I guess the conversation starts in verse 10, where Jesus says, if you knew the gift God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me and I would give you living water. And then they kind of go back and forth, you know, and he promises her living water. And as soon as she accepts the offer, then he brings up, like, the husband thing, which seems kind of like a total kind of 90-degree turn a little bit. But as I think about this, I guess in my experience in following Jesus and being a Christian, it's like, right, God promises you a certain quality or standard of life, you know, like a certain joy. I mean, I don't mean that materially, I mean that, like, spiritually, like your mm-hmm. your in your inner life, you know, he promises you this joy and living water, and then you say, yeah, that sounds good, and then he starts probing at things, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, how about this thing? Like, she's clearly, and it's interesting that it's a woman-man interaction, because she clearly, you know, is, her interactions with men have either been from her perspective where she feels like she gets her value or where she needs her value to survive or whatever, but as soon as she accepts this offer, he's like, okay, it's not quite that easy. You know, you've got other stuff to deal with. And he does make it really awkward. One of the things I guess I love about Jesus too is, like, he says, like, pretty straightforward things to people that are really hard to accept. And yet, at the end of the stories, like, the people don't, like, people still love him. You know, like, he's not, like, the kind of guy that just, like, burns bridges and says stuff just for effect, right? Like, he's mm-hmm. clearly intentional about what he's doing. And she's hanging around this conversation, and she's intrigued by him, you know? She tries to kind of change the subject, right? Which is what I try to do, right? When God comes to me and says, like, here's all the things I want you to, like, take a look at that. Maybe you should change this. Maybe you should, you know, here's a bunch of spiritually and emotionally, like, vulnerable places for you. Let's talk about it, you know? Like, you gotta deal with this stuff if you really want to live into the joy that I'm promising you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, hey, what about worship on this mountain or that? You know, it's like, it's total, like, it just seems like a deflection. And I feel like I can relate to that because I've spent a lot of time trying to kind of play middle that, right? You want mm-hmm. the things Jesus is going to give you, but on the other side of it, you don't really want change.
Yeah.
And I think part of, like, the impetus for this reading through Lent, you know, reading through the Gospel of John, is just the continual, like, Jesus poking at my, like, go get your husband kind of areas of my soul. He's like,
yeah.
I'm not going to leave that alone. You know? Like, I'm going to keep going. And but I think it's like, after a while, you just kind of have to let down your guard eventually. At least that's kind of how I feel about it. So.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up, that he didn't call her out on any of her sin, whatever, craziness, until she said, sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to drink.
That's
to
really
draw water.
Insightful.
Yeah, like,
right.
It's
he doesn't come out saying, like, hey, I know you have five husbands. Like, he doesn't get there until, you know, she actually lets, he allows her the ability, right, to let him in to that spot. That's really, yeah, that's really insightful.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other interesting things, there's a, when I was thinking about this before we hit play, I guess as I've started to read the Bible more, it's like, there's never stuff, details that seem weird when you, like, look at them. It seems like there's always usually reasons for them.
Mm-hmm.
So in verse 6, it says, like, Jacob's well was there.
I was hoping you would bring this up.
So do you want to...
I'm really excited.
Have
well,
about
talk
well?
About... Yeah,
well, all I did was, I'm like, okay, so, like, Jacob's well. And then there's a little footnote that says, that directs you to Genesis 33. So if you go to Genesis 33, there's a story about Jacob and Esau, like, reconciling. Where Jacob was really freaked out that Esau was going to just destroy him, and then they make their amends. And then the next, like, verse, he goes and buys a plot of land, which is, I guess, where people think this well was put.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought it was interesting because you have, like, kind of this reconciliation between Jacob and Esau, and Jesus is coming, this reconciling, you know, person between Jews and Samaritans, but also through, you know, everybody, you know.
Yeah.
All of the racial, whatever, tensions that he reconciled. You know, I just thought it was an interesting little note that John's putting in there to say, where is this well? It's right now.
Well, and then she brings it back up, and it's... I read it as kind of a condescending question, where she's like, are you greater than our ancestor Jacob? Right? Because he's one of the patriarchs. He's one of the ones that they're going to look back to. And his short answer is, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I actually am. Because he's able to provide this woman with what Jacob's well couldn't, and that is life.
Yeah.
He gives her life. And I think that that's really incredible, and it makes me think a lot about what are the different wells that I keep trying to go drink from that aren't Jesus and his living water.
But seem like maybe they're still a good thing because,
like,
they were built by my ancestors and given this land, and so it's got to be good, right? It's good
right.
enough.
And so my old tactics of, like, the well of perfectionism or the well of performance or, like, striving or anything like that just falls completely short because you have to keep going back and keep going back and keep going back. And so when I read this passage, there's a deeper layer to me that's saying there's only one well you actually need to drink from. And that is the life of Jesus and his mercy and his joy that you were talking about earlier only comes from that place. And that to me is deeply convicting.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, you're right. Like, Jesus is not shy about being like, yeah, I am greater than everybody else. Like, you're right, like, he claims to be the Messiah. I feel like throughout the book, we're going to see more and more instances where people are going to get angry at Jesus because he claims to be God.
Mm-hmm.
And he continues to do it over and over and over again. One of the things I thought, Sadie, was interesting about your translation that you're reading, 23 and 24 says, like, the time is coming when true worshipers will worship the Father. And your translation says the hour is coming.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, like, there's also a theme of the hour throughout the book of John. Like, in John 2, when they're at the wedding and they run out of wine, Jesus' mother is like, you know, can you fix this? He's like, my hour hasn't come yet. And so there's, like, this building to, you know, when he's, but finally then, you know, eventually he'll say the hour has come, you know, and it's time for him to die. But I thought that it was interesting because I would have missed that, you know, just saying the time is coming here now. Like, Jesus is thinking about his death, you know, I think fairly frequently throughout the time he's on.
Sure.
He's up, you know, he's interacting with people. You know, he has that in the back of his mind, and it kind of comes through a little bit in the cracks, you know, as he's speaking. So,
yeah, if you pay attention, you'll see it all over the place.
Cool, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. You want to stick around and do another one sometime?
Sure.
Yeah,
we'll be
it.
Back.
We'll do another one. All right, cool. Thanks.